Welcome to the Rearview Mirror Podcast, looking back on all that we don't know and a few things that we do.
Doesn't seem like he'd be a ton of fun to hang out with. Like those commercials where he's the Airbnb owner, you know?
Yes.
And he's reading through.
Yeah.
There's a great barbecue outside. Don't touch that. Oh, you won't have any fun. That feels like that's how he really
those
is.
Feel like that's who he would
it
really
doesn't
be.
Look like yep. a stretch for yep. him.
No,
you know what I mean?
I think you're right.
Are we on?
Yep, we are. We are.
Everything
live.
Down below too? Like the sound and
I've got us ready to roll. So in a minute you can do your mic check, but not yet. Don't do it yet.
Why not?
Okay, go ahead.
So you have to be ready for my mic check? Why is that?
Because I have to be in the
oh.
I don't know.
Mic check, check, mic check.
We must be live.
We're talking about Nick Saban.
Yeah. Nick Saban in the draft. What a good way to start a morning.
Man, it was. It was kind of a
well, y'all watched all of it last night, you were just saying.
Yeah, flip back and forth, and this will take our listeners down from 80 to 3. I flip back and forth from the draft to the NBA playoffs, which I know love. So, yeah.
Who? I'm so disconnected. Who played last night?
Well, you're a white guy from East Tennessee, well, know, so you're not. There's no. We have no common ground here.
But I watched a little bit the night before. You know, I watched Houston and
on purpose,
Golden State. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Laura was out. I was bored, and I watched probably a little more than half the game.
I watched
Jimmy Butler get his legs taken out from him, although I still can't see if I actually touched him or not.
Playoff Jimmy gets calls, so, you know. Last night, the only reason I watched last night, I really like watching Oklahoma City play because they got a lot of young guys and they're really good. They were down to Memphis by 29 points.
Gosh.
And came back and won.
Did they really?
Yeah, so I couldn't kind of turn away. It's like a car crash.
Yeah.
You know, I couldn't turn away from that. Yeah, watch the NFL draft. I like to see, it's interesting, it's like running a business, you know, it's interesting to see why these guys pick the players they do, what their thought process is, and, you know, the whys behind it and what they need. Everybody's, it's kind of a copycat league, you know, so.
Yeah. Anybody that jumped out to you as you were watching the draft as far as anything about them, just, you know, storylines or whatever?
Nah, Jen was more interested in the storylines.
Okay.
I was more interested in who took who and why.
That's so cool.
There were some good stories, though. I mean, a lot of families, you know, spend a lot of time and money to get their kids to that spot. And
it's kind of a game-changing moment, you know, their lives, right?
You know, and it is. And I was thinking about this. So two things. You know, it is a copycat league, and so Philadelphia wins the Super Bowl with a really dominant offensive and defensive line. So what do you see in the first round this year? A lot of offensive and defensive linemen.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. But I was thinking about this the other day. You know, we teach our kids, work hard, do well in school so you can get a job and contribute to society and all that stuff. But, I mean, that's what a lot of these parents have done in the sports world.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of frown upon that sometimes as, oh, they're just playing sports. They're getting paid all this money to play the sport. Well, yeah, that's true. But, you know, one, they generate a ton of money. So that's always helpful for a business.
Mm-hmm.
And two, they've really done what we want them to do. They've been really successful in their particular field. It's just not always. Sometimes it is. Some of these guys are academically off the charts too, but some are not.
Right.
But some kids that focus only on academics are not academically that strong.
I know.
So if I had a mirror right here, I'd be looking at one of them. So.
I'm speaking about me today. Anyway. That word game changer, you know, about these guys, you know, I thought about this driving over here this morning. When you look back on the story of Steve, you know, over your 5.5 decades now, plus 3, what are some game-changing moments for you? Moments just where, you know, you realize, man, that really altered. Maybe in real time we don't know they are. I mean, I think if you suddenly go from, you know, being a college kid that's making a little bit of money, I know in NIL they make a lot of money too, but to these crazy contracts you get in the NFL or MLB or whatever – it's easy to see that game-changing moment in real time. But for a lot of us, I think our game-changing moments, we look in the, rearview mirror. Didn't mean to do that. Sorry.
I think you did.
No, I really didn't.
Well,
but I wish I would have because that was good.
Yeah.
No, but, you know, I think we do. We look back and we go, oh, my gosh, that was a game-changing moment. Like, when you think about your life story, are there some game-changing moments that have shaped you to who you become?
I don't know. Do you have a context in mind? Like a?
No, I think, I don't know. Literally driving today, I thought, game changers. And I didn't know we'd start talking about the draft, but just when are those games? I don't feel like I've even been reflecting on it for me, but I just thought, be an interesting conversation.
Yeah. I have to think about that for just a second.
Yeah. I mean, there's some low-hanging fruit in my story. I know, like, you know, I think of the death of my mom when I was 20 years old. You know, boy, that changed the trajectory of my life in ways that I couldn't imagine. You know, I think she was such a matriarch, old traditional Southern family, and, you know, did her bidding. And I think when her voice was no longer in my life, and my dad kind of just did his own thing, it opened up doors for me. And I mean, it was a tragic loss, but it opened up doors for me in a positive way. So I think there's some low-hanging fruit moments I think of. You know, getting married was a game changer. Having babies was a game changer. But I'm just thinking about, you know, in hindsight, what are some moments that you go, man, meeting that person or being involved with that, or I don't know, just whatever.
Let me ask you a clarifying question. What do you think you would have done differently had your mother stayed alive longer?
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
how does that connect the dots on how the path is different?
So it's all hypothetical, right? But right. In my mind, I know the power mom had in our family structure. And I could have seen myself staying in Cleveland, Tennessee, my little hometown, you know, and living my life in such a way to make sure that mom, I had her approval on what I was doing, who I was relating to, who I married probably. I mean, she just had that kind of, you know, in hindsight, I don't think I realized it in real time as a young man, but she had a lot of control. And I think it would have been really easy for me to have lived a different life. I don't know if it'd been better or worse, but to have lived a really different life that would have probably kept me in East Tennessee instead of, you know, at 21 years old, loading everything I have in a Volkswagen Rabbit and driving to the western suburbs of Chicago to go to grad school with not two nickels in my pocket. But
you don't think you would have done that if she just stayed alive?
I really don't.
Oh, that's interesting. You've never told me that.
Yeah. No, I just think there was such a need in me to please her. I don't know. Maybe not, but in hindsight, I know the way I interpret those. And that was game changing because it opened up options for me.
Right.
Not even her fault when I'm saying that. I don't want to throw her under the bus. But
no.
Just the way I think I lived my life going, you know, my dad's message was, you know, we got to work hard to keep mom happy. And so I learned to do that.
In some ways, when she died, there was a burden that was lifted.
There really was. I mean, it was liberating is the word I've used at times. So game changing for me, you know.
Yeah. That's good. So we were in Little Rock where I grew up for Easter, seeing my family, and there's a lot of laughter. There's stories. Mm-hmm. Jen would say there's a lot of the same stories, although I did share a few new ones this time. So that was good.
Good.
That doesn't happen very often. But there was one story I remember. So I was talking with my nephews about school, and they saw some of the places that I went to school, public schools, and what we would call, you know, inner city schools. And we got bused, and we were one of the first bus generations, you know. And
right.
I mean, it's odd to think about today, but I remember the first day at this junior high school in seventh grade, and it was a huge school, and walking out when you got your first break at recess. And I thought, okay, I'm a pretty good basketball player. All right. So now keep in mind, I'm probably in the seventh grade. I was about 6'2" and probably 110 pounds.
Oh, wow.
I mean, when I say skinny.
And then some.
Yeah. People say that all the time. You know, I'm talking to other guys. Oh, I was skinny in high school. I'm like, no, man, let me tell you.
Let me tell you what skinny was.
Bro, I was skinny. So I walk out, I thought, I'm going to play basketball. I'm going to get involved with some people out there. Well, I walk out there. There are, and I'm not exaggerating, there are 100 guys on this basketball court. No nets, rims are all over the place.
Oh my gosh.
And I see two guys that I would eventually go on and play in high school with, two guys in the seventh grade, just get a ball, walk up and just dunk it. And they were probably 5'10 and 5'11 and, you know, one of 20 in the seventh grade that could do that. And it was a little bit of a game changer for me because I don't know that I processed it, but I thought, I still really love this game, and man, I've got to get better.
Yeah.
You know? And so just navigating all that and, you know, riding the bus home from practice, we didn't have as many distractions than that day. So I think my love for, I watch more football. I enjoy that game. Mm-hmm. I enjoy the chess match part of that game, but I love the game of basketball.
Yeah.
And I think it's more than the game. I think it's because it shaped so much of my thinking growing up. I learned so much by going to the playground, and it's so different today. This is a story my kids say that I repeat, but you know, you go to the playground in our day.
Yeah.
And there's no age breakdown.
Yeah.
Whoever's there plays. And today, you know, you sign your kids up for, you know, football at 10 years old or 12 years old, and you if you're a certain weight, you do this, and if you're a certain age, right. you do this. And back in that day, it was just everybody's mixed together. So, but yeah. you learn things from that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? So that's that was just kind of a game changer, I think, just getting involved in that, having to kind of navigate my way through I wouldn't call it a hostile world, but you know, you figure out how to do something so right. that you can contribute.
Right. So many questions when you talked about that story. Like, what did that do? Seventh grade boy, thinking I got pretty good game, going out there and really quick going, whoa, there's plenty of other people with a good game. What did that do at a confidence level for you? And what did it do then kind of at a work ethic level for you?
I mean, it shot my confidence. Mm-hmm. I didn't get picked up for, I bet it was, it probably wasn't until the second semester of my seventh grade year where I even got to play in a game.
Wow. Okay.
Because, you know, and again, this might take our listeners down from 3 to 1, but in that day, if you played, you know, 5-on-5, there's a ton of guys watching. The winner of the game keeps playing.
Oh, yeah.
The loser sits.
Right.
And the next team's up. Well, there were, you know, 10 next teams waiting, and that nobody knew me, and they weren't interested in picking me.
Wow.
And I didn't have any way of showing I could, you know, do anything. And so yeah. I just continued on and on and on. Finally, somebody, you know, felt pity, and I got in the game and probably didn't do very much. But yeah. it was just you learn, and I learned, you learn so much. But people value success.
Yeah, yeah.
And how you get there is not as relevant as, at least in my mind, that's what I learned, is process is important, but process without results is just meaningless.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
When did basketball start becoming more? When did your confidence begin going, man, I know how to play this game?
So probably that same year, one of the guys in our neighborhood put together a little kind of a mini AAU team.
Oh, really?
Rec team, yeah. So this was aside from school. And later on, where I went to high school, there were 2 AAU teams in the state of Arkansas. One of them was coached by our high school coach, and I could never get on that team.
Wow. Wow.
It was just, again, it was the days of no, there wasn't really any pity. There was no daddy ball. There was none of that. Yeah, you just kind of had to, you know, I just wouldn't, and honestly, I wasn't good enough at that time to be on that team. But, this guy in the neighborhood put this team together, and we would go around to different areas around Little Rock and play. And we went to a public housing place one day at a gym.
Wow.
And he took us all in there, and I was the only white guy within, you know, 5 miles. And walked in, and the energy in the gym.
Electric.
It was, I was in awe.
Wow.
And, it was that way the whole game. Mm-hmm. And I remember hitting my first shot, and the reaction from the crowd was, it was almost like being on stage if you're a musician, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, oh, man, I found it. I found my home.
That's so cool. Seventh grade.
Yeah, sixth, seventh grade, sometime right in there. And so started working at it and had a, you know, love-hate, off-on relationship. But I think it really... obviously, because I talk about it a lot, it shaped a lot of things. And, right. and you're right. The low hanging fruit is, kids for me was a game changer because, my dad was not all that involved, and something I really wanted to do. Getting married was obviously a game changer because, Jen's a great compliment for my personality.
Absolutely.
And, but that was one I just happened to think about that this weekend.
Yeah. Yeah. Being back there.
Yeah. Some of those stories. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. Any other things on the top of your brain on that, those game changing moments when you look back over your life, maybe in the arena of work?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I got I worked for a nonprofit for a couple of years, and I met a guy at our church, and he and I were greeters at the church. Now, if you knew this guy and if you know me, there's a chuckle there. You know,
really?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
yeah, I mean, I know you.
Yeah. I'm not a greeter. Yeah. I'm not the greeter type. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I may not be, I may have been misplaced with my skill set there. But we were greeters because at that time at our church, we sang for so long. I couldn't sing that long. And, sorry about that confession, but
yeah,
we did it. So we could hang out, we could miss a few songs and then go in there and pick it up, you know, later. Ended up working for him, in the commercial real estate business. So that kind of started, and that's what I'm still in the real estate business for good or bad. But that was, looking back, that was a game changer.
Yeah.
I had a guy later on that told me, and he's probably not listening, but, as I got into that and got a little better at it and figured out what I'm good at and what I'm not good at, I had one guy that kind of told me the truth at one point, and he said, "Man, you're one of the best I've ever seen at this.
Wow.
And you are for shit at this."
Yeah. Yeah. But really clear with you.
And for whatever reason, in God's providence, that speaks to my personality.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I never forgot that. And he was absolutely right. Wow. And so, then the old business debate, do you work on your strengths or your weaknesses? And so I just try to shore up my weaknesses as much as I can, knowing that I'm wired a certain way, and try to lean into my strengths and hopefully find things that are more geared toward those.
Yeah. When you said that, it reminded me of a friend I had when we were living in the Chicago area years ago. His name was Tim, and I had such respect, admiration for Tim. And I remember being at lunch with him one day. Gosh, this is like mid-90s probably. Late 90s. And he just said, "Jeff," he goes, "can I give you an observation?" He goes, you tend to play junior in every room you're in. And I said, "What do you mean by that?" You know? And he said, "Well, you quickly defer to everybody else. You quickly just, you know, somebody's always better than you. Somebody's always got more." And in my mind, I'm thinking, yeah, that's a really good thing about me, is that I know I'm not the best blank in the room. And he's like, "Yeah," but he goes, "I think what it leads you to is you don't own your strengths, because you have some strengths and you choose not to own them." And I remember leaving going, I'm not sure what Tim meant. I'm not sure he sees me accurately. I play junior. Well, that's mid-90s. I mean, it would be a decade plus later probably when I would finally realize, oh my gosh, he's right. I get in a room and I read rooms pretty well, I think, you know. But then I'll size up, oh, there's the leader, or oh, there's the best guy, or there's the whatever guy. And then I'll just find a way to kind of tuck myself under their coattail almost. You know, that was my deal for so long. And so Tim and I, you know, when we moved here in 99, our paths, you know, we just didn't cross. And guys in long distance, man, we just don't stay in touch, it seems like. But I remember in 2007 or 8, something like that, in the middle of a season of my life where I'm trying to figure out, why have I done what I've done with my life? Went and hung out with Tim again. He invited us to come up to an event that he was leading. He was an executive coach at the time. And I remember at the end of it, he said, it's kind of like what you were talking about what this real estate guy said to you, greeting. At the end of this event that he let us attend, Laura and I went together, attend kind of as his guest. At the end of it, he said, he said, "What'd you think about this?" I said, "Well, this was good, but it's a lot of this stuff is for a coaching certification program." I said, I don't mean this arrogantly, but I feel like I feel like I've been around already. And I remember he just was like pounding the table. Like, this is what I've tried to tell you ever since I've known you. "Jeff, I brought you this on purpose. I want you to see that what I'm doing," and he's making a killing at the time doing what he's doing. He said, "What I'm doing, you could be doing. There's no reason for you not to be doing this." And I remember just thinking, gosh, but I could hear it. There was some part of me going, this is what he meant. I keep playing junior to other people. They can do it, but I probably couldn't do it. And honestly, that conversation in 2007, 2008, whatever, it's what led me to go into the coaching business that I've been in the last 15 years. And, you know, but it was somebody seeing something and saying something twice, probably 15 years, 10 years apart, and just saying, "You have what it takes, dude. Go try this." And that was a defining moment for me too.
Why do you think you're comfortable in the junior role? Or why were you comfortable?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great question. I think there's so much, you know, as I've said to you before, I think there's so much fear in my story growing up that I have to do it the right way, you know, or gosh, if I don't do it this way, then I'll be doing it wrong. I think some of it comes from the, you know, I mean, this was not nearly as much disrespect as it's going to sound, but a lot of it was the crazy Pentecostals I grew up with.
Yeah.
You know, In that world, there is a pecking order of your spirituality, and it's based on external behavior that you perform with. Hmm. And I didn't perform with those, you know, kind of gifts that other people had. So I think early on in my life, I realized, well, man, those are real people, you know, who are spiritual and of faith. Obviously, I'm not, because I don't do that behavior like they do.
Right.
So I think that reinforced with just, you know, a family where dad, God love him, kindest man you'd ever meet, but was just a weak man. I mean, he just was weak in building me up into a man.
Yeah.
I think it was just easy for me to look at anybody else and go, well, you must be stronger. You must be smarter. You must be better than me. And I really think it was through my friend Tim and through some other counseling I did, you know, in the early 2000s, I began going, why won't I just own who I am and just be me? I don't have to be the best, but I need to be the best version of me I can be.
And maybe I am the best in some areas.
Maybe. And you know, to be able to go, gosh, I'm really good at this. And you're like, I think 20 years ago, I would have never said I'm really good at this. I think today I could go, gosh, there's some things I'm really good at.
Yeah.
And there's some things I'm not good at. And I don't need to be good at those things. It's okay not to be.
Mm. I've had people tell me in my work life that, people close to me that have said, man, you undervalue yourself.
Very similar.
And I can, and they're right. And not sure why that is.
Yep.
Because, you know, going back to the basketball for a second, one of the things that I think that taught me that I really love about work is just the chaos.
Yes.
I had a friend that passed away a few years ago, and he always said, man, I can work in any industry if I can find where my skill set fits. And I resonate with that because I'm always kind of have one eye looking around. Hey, what is there something else I could contribute to? Something, some other group? I love what I'm doing, but I'm always kind of looking for the next thing around the corner a little bit, you know. And so there's a part of that chaos that I don't mind at all, but yet I do. When the rubber meets the road, sometimes I just settle for things that maybe I don't need to settle for, or undervalue.
Yeah.
But I don't know why that is. Yeah.
There is something connected. I think that, you know, Tim would say you're being a junior or you're playing small. And I think that playing small really connect with me going, oh, I'm aware I'm playing small. Like I'm not really bringing my A game, but I'm, you know, that Enneagram 3 in me, I'm enough of a schemer and chameleon that you're going to think I am. But,
right.
But I know this, I'm not really taking the risk, because if I take the full risk, I might fail at it. But, you know, I think I've reached a place in my life where I'm like, failure is my friend now. I want to try as hard as I can. If I fail at it, I'm just go, huh, all right, well, that one doesn't work. And
yeah.
feel such more of a, almost a confidence or swagger that it's okay, man, at least I tried.
Well, and even in that failure or times where, you know, we're in the context of work now. So if your work world's at a lull or you're in one of those valleys,
yep.
You know, if you don't mind failing, or not mind it, that's probably not the right way to say it, but if failure is your friend, I think you can recognize that and say, man, I'm in a valley. It doesn't mean, because there's times over the last year that I go, man, am I even any good at my job?
Right.
I mean, because of the results and seemingly at the, you know, they're just out of reach but I know enough about myself. I've lived enough life to know now that, you know what, it's just in one of those cycles where, you know, again, a sports analogy, our team's not playing that well right now.
Yeah.
And it'll get better.
Yep.
But the fear of failure is a driver.
Yeah.
And bad.
Yeah. I think some of that, I wonder, I know in my story, this is true. I wonder if some of that comes from the religious legalism that was part of both our stories, you know, where it's just like, man, if you fail, you know, God's going to be so upset at you. I think that was another, you know, I kind of asked you the question about game changers. And as I say that, I talked about Tim a minute ago, in my Chicago days. I'll talk about Jim in my Chicago days just for a second.
You're making these people up.
No, they're real. I can call them. But I remember with Jim, he was a guy I worked with in church world back in the day. And we had worked together maybe a year, and he was my boss, and he wrote an annual review for me. And in it, he said something like, you know, all these kudos on my performance. This is what you do. You're great at this. Great kudos. And then at the end, he goes, but you seem to take yourself so seriously. Mm. And then at the end of a performance review, I remember he wrote this phrase. He goes, you need to take a bath in grace. And I thought, what in the hell does that even mean?
Right.
That made no sense to me. you know. But what I would learn from him over the next couple of years that we would work together is that Jim really lived in this authentic place of just going, you know what, it's so not about my performance. It's so not about my perfection. It's so not about me getting things right. It's about that there's this ability just to be gracious. And I think I often will say that, you know, working with Jim and then being introduced to some guys that I would read, you know, never officially met them, who wrote about the power of living a life that's anchored in graciousness instead of perfectionism or performance. That was definitely a game changing moment in my life to be able to be, have a new perspective of, oh, the essence of who God is about love and mercy and grace instead of, you know, I just saw him as this just angry, ticked off lightning bolt in his hand. I'm going to knock you out kind of person. And so one of my big game changers, I think, was being able to go, wait a minute, I want to walk well. And when I don't, that's not the end of the world. That's not the end of the run for me. His grace is greater than.
And I wonder too, you know, I think what that produces is, well, it produces fear, but one of the tangential detriments of that, I guess, is everybody in that congregation is acting that way.
Yeah.
And everybody's hiding something because they're afraid that, mm-hmm. you know, if people found out who I really am, then right. they're going to think less of me.
Yeah.
And I think that's a tendency, I think, in a lot of areas, a lot of churches. I think there are a lot of people that grow up thinking, and I cannot share who I really am. And they show mm-hmm. that to their kids. Mm-hmm. And so their kids end up thinking, man, well, life's really good. It works out great.
Yeah.
You know? And
right.
No, you just don't know what's behind the scenes.
Or the flip side, well, I can't talk to Dad about that because he's never struggled with anything like
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
You know, yeah. that's the even right. more dangerous side, I think. You know,
right.
our kids put us on this pedestal like, man, you got your stuff all together, Dad. God, you'll never yeah. understand. I struggle with lying, or I copied on a test today, or I struggled with porn, whatever, you know.
Well, so, I'm sure I do that with my kids because mm-hmm. in my mind, I want them to think I'm the hero.
Yeah. That's a story we like to write.
Oh, man. It's just it's a good one, and it's an mm-hmm. easy one, and I don't want them to... The irony of that is probably better than anyone else. Maybe sometimes even better than your spouse. They see through.
Yeah.
They see through you.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so, and that's right. good.
Yeah. So talked about it kind of just in general and kind of, we both kind of went to childhood and then talked about it vocationally, kind of game changing moments. What's another category in this whole area of game changers? Because we end up talking about our kids so much, but what was a game changing moment for you in parenting?
I don't know. I have to think about that for a second. I don't, nothing's
jumps
I'm
out.
Sure there are some, but, I mean, realizing, I mean, you know, trying to be one of those dads that I always said, hey, I'm not going to live vicariously through my kids.
Mm.
And then realizing, well, I do. I enjoy it.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Yeah.
And whether it's academically or in sports, I would go from, you know, I was coaching at the time when Will was playing in high school football. And so I'd leave his practice and, you know, enjoy the accolades if he had a good day, and I'd go then drive across town to watch Caroline play volleyball.
Yeah.
And you know, when your kids have success, you enjoy the accolades of that. I mean, you could see it last night on the draft. You know, these parents are so proud of their kids, and some of it's legitimate, man. Proud of my kids. Enjoy watching them.
My brother-in-law and I, his kids were athletes, and as mine were in. Our standing joke was, what's that kid doing? Does he not know he plays this sports for my satisfaction?
Yeah, right. So true.
You're like, you know, obviously tongue in cheek. And yet there's a part of it going, I think I felt that way at times.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. I mean, I've watched you in a couple of areas. I know. Yeah.
Oh,
but you know, it's, so that realizing that they can take a different path.
Yeah.
That's not my path.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
I think realizing, I don't know when this happened, but not not transferring my junk onto them.
That's a game-changing moment when you realize I don't need to do that.
And not a, sometimes it's game-changing seasons rather than moments.
Good point.
Like I remember, I don't remember specific instances necessarily, a couple of things, but just, man, that he's, you know, particularly with my son, because we're both males, you know, God, this is my junk. This is not his.
Yeah.
He's like me in a lot of ways, but he's not in a lot of ways.
Right.
And
right.
He's much healthier in most ways.
Mm-hmm.
And even with my daughter going, and this is who God made her to be. I don't need to try to make her smaller because I'm afraid of what the outcome might be.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I remember years ago talking with a counselor in town. One of our kids was in adolescence and navigating some awkward moments and hard moments. And the counselor just said, you know, Jeff, why do you think it's going to be your responsibility to make sure your child doesn't do A, B, or C? And at first I was like, well, that's a stupid question. I'm the father. Of course, it's my responsibility. But I think I like your phrase, game-changing season. I think that was the beginning of a big season for me of going, you know, my kids are going to become young adults, and then they become bigger adults, and then older adults. Mm-hmm. And they don't need my permission or my blessing or my anything to do, you know, what they're going to do. And I think there was a freedom when I could begin to pull back a little bit, kind of like what we talked about last week, honestly, and just go, gosh, they need to work out their own story. And again, I do want to support them. I do want to bless them. I want to be available to them, but I don't have to guide them. It's not my responsibility. And there was something liberating and going, you know what? They've got to work out their own journey. That's okay.
And the outcome or their choice may be a better choice than what you have.
Oh, well, we've talked about this before. I think watching all my kids with their vocational career choices has been exponentially better for them than what I, quote unquote, thought they needed to do with their lives. I missed it completely, you know?
Well, one of the little things that sticks with you when you grow up the way we did is it's so outcome based in that spiritual world that that's what you think about. Mm-hmm. And really, I think a couple things stand out. The gospel that was portrayed in that setting in my mind is not the gospel at all.
Right.
Now, I had family and friends that understood the gospel and great people around.
That's great.
And my grandparents, particularly my mom, understands it. I mean, so my dad, even at some level, but the church itself, what they perpetuated, I don't think, I mean, the gospel is God reached down and did something for us that we can't do for ourselves. Mm-hmm. So by definition, there's going to be failure on our part.
Yeah.
And there's going to be things we don't do well. How much of that we let other people see, that's up to us.
Yeah.
But there's failure by definition. Yeah. Otherwise, we wouldn't need him.
Yeah.
And so, but the second part of that, I think, is that I don't control the outcome.
Right.
And there's a part of my personality that's naturally bent towards that. I can I can kind of let things go and be pretty laid back about some of the detail things in my world. Mm-hmm. But there is a real freedom, and I do not control the outcome of what my kids do, what my wife does, what my friends do. I'm responsible for my relationship with them. And for there is a responsibility, I think, and a duty there to you know, not be an idiot, be an accessible person that's continuing to let God change them. Change me so that they can see that. Mm-hmm. But ultimately what they, I mean, they're responsible for themselves.
Yeah.
Or better yet, God's responsible for them.
Right. Right. I may have said this before, but you know, that's what we do is repeat ourselves as we get older, I suppose.
I'm sorry, I wasn't listening. What did you say?
You know, you're responsible for a really significant game-changing moment in my life.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, no, for good.
You want to think this through? Okay, you want to think through before you share this? All right.
No, I remember, and I don't know how long ago this was. It was before 2010. I'm positive of that. And you and I were at probably one of our many Panera mornings, and we were talking, and I don't know, I was woe is me about something, and it was financially, and I remember said something like, I just feel like we've got to curb our expenses. You know, we had two kids in college, or at least one kid in college, and you know, it's a line that you've used a lot through the years, but you said, Jeff, I don't think you have an expense problem. I think you have an income problem. Hmm. And I remember it was one of those boom moments, like, gosh, I'm so focused on, oh, can we be more careful here? Can we save here? Can we do whatever here? Which all that did was it fed to my already scarcity brain, you know, I think. And I remember when you said, you know, you have an income problem. What would it mean if you could make a few more dollars somehow, somewhere? And that was just such a big like a shift for me. You know, again, I don't want to be stupid here. I think there's something wise and make sure you pay attention to expenses,
for sure.
Right?
For sure.
And I know that wasn't your intent. But to be able to go, there's this whole other side of the ledger sheet you're not even thinking about, which is how I lived so much of my life. Well, and that was that. I think that's, you know, that's been a great liberating place for me to be able to look at a situation. And again, I think there's wisdom, you know, okay, is there something we can curb? But more than anything going, well, wait a minute, is there a way I can make more money? I mean, do I need to go sell a piece of furniture? You know, whatever.
Right.
What do I need to do right now to change that income side? And that was really a brain shift moment for me. And I think it was pretty much of a moment more than a season because it was like, well, wait a minute, then what can I do differently in that area?
Yeah.
I don't know if I ever told you that, but I really appreciate that.
That's good. Thanks.
Yeah.
Gosh, I wish I could exercise that consistently
in
my own life, you know. And I think, dude, you know, again, naturally, I'm not drawn to detail necessarily.
Right.
And so the expense side of the ledger is always going to be a struggle for me. But I've even had to reevaluate the last few years in my business and say, okay, is it really as good as I think it is? Am I really doing enough with my time, you know, just with my time and really think through some things strategically that probably should have been obvious at times, but are not. And so, you know, just you're constantly learning and growing. But I do think there's some, whether or not you do this well or not, but there is some wisdom in you can cut your expenses to zero, but you've still got to have some money to live.
Yeah.
You know, it's like in, I always use the, you know, this didn't go over well when I was coaching, but I think, you know, in most sports, particularly football where I was, offense is more important than defense.
Mm-hmm.
You can hold a team to 0 points and not win.
Right.
That's the only thing you need to know about that. Yeah. I mean, you have to score.
Yeah.
And there are ways they work together and defense is certainly important, but it's, that's kind of revenue and expense. I mean, revenue solves a lot of problems.
Yeah.
Now, it doesn't mean you're going to be wealthy.
Right.
But, and people that save, and I think once people become wealthy, paying attention to expenses is important, and that's probably the way you stay wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not the way you get wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
It's
yeah,
you get wealthy by making it.
Yeah,
or inheriting it.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Or marrying it.
Yeah.
Or sorry, Jen, you didn't do that, but you know,
yeah. Game changers. One other category. And something popped in my mind just then, and so I'll share it first, and you can think about it. But game changers that impacted the way you saw Jen differently, the way you saw your marriage differently, the way you engaged in your marriage differently, kind of broad category about marriage since we had kind of the other big areas. And I'll tell a quick story. We were probably at year 14 or 15 of marriage, something like that. And we went to do some counseling because we were just in some perpetual patterns that just, you know, couldn't get resolution, couldn't get agreement on. And so we went in, and this guy, he was gracious with us and tried to help us think through, you know, kind of what the situation was. Well, one day, I don't know, I had some edge on me, and he said something about, he asked this question, and I'm pretty sure Laura was in the room that day, which makes this answer of mine even more egregious. But his question was this. He goes, "Jeff, you say you're a person of faith." "Yes." He says, "So do you think that Laura is God's good provision for you?" And what came out of my mouth was this answer. I said, "Well, I think she can be."
Oh, my.
And you know those moments when it comes out and you immediately go, "Oh, crap. What did I just say?" That was an "oh, crap" moment. But it reflected what's true in my heart. If Laura would change and become what I want her to become, then that's what God would want for me. I mean, the heresy in that is multiple layered. But be able to sit there and talk about it and be honest about it and then begin realizing, going, wait, why can't I just accept Laura exactly as Laura is and realize that who she is what I need? And if I've thought about that conversation once, I've thought about it 1,000 times in the last 20 years of marriage. Yeah. And it's always a recalibrating moment going, wait, why am I trying to get her to change? I need to change in my expectation, in my desire, in my longing. I need to speak into this. I need to stop being passive to it. So that was one of those moments that I have frequently thought about, is that simple question allowed me to go, wait a minute, Laura is who she is. And those were in my vows. I receive you for who you are, But, you know, 10 years in, I'm going, and could you change in these three areas for me? You know, instead of going, wait, this is who you are.
But isn't that at the crux of every relationship?
Probably.
You know, I mean, if you believe in God and you believe that he's sovereign, okay, then the people he's put around you, kids, friends, family, spouse.
They're there for a purpose.
They're there for a purpose.
Yeah, that's a great phrase.
And I'm Jen's good provision, and she's mine.
Yes.
And most days we like each other.
Yep.
Some days we don't.
Yep. Yeah.
After 30 years, that's okay.
Yes.
Because we're committed and we're in.
And you know you'll find your way back.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And so friends, I mean, the ability to, and this is a struggle for me, but the more I do it, the more peaceful my life is. Mm. The ability to let people be who they are.
Yeah.
And not having to change them or fix them.
It's liberating.
It is liberating.
Yeah.
And when you don't, it is paralyzing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because it never ends. If only they would do, if only our situation was X, if only this person would do X, well, that never ends.
Right. Right. I'm constantly chasing my dissatisfaction instead of acceptance.
Yeah. Yep. And I can go there in a heartbeat. So, mm-hmm. I think with her, I think I shared this on the one we did about Valentine's Day, but just realizing probably 20 years in that I didn't let her have a voice, you know, and she would say to, it has said, hey, I need to be stronger about sharing my voice. But I bear the responsibility of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's on me. Yeah. I just kind of bullied her.
What helped you see that? How did your eyes get open?
I don't know, man. Yeah. I don't know. I think I really don't remember a particular thing or event.
Yeah.
Just probably over some conflict and just realizing over time, and maybe I'll think about it today and next week I'll remember something more specific.
Yeah, no,
and maybe
she
remembers something, but I think just
resolving. Well, I'm pretty sure she'll remember something. But keep going.
Sure. A lot of it had to do with our kids getting older and just realizing, you know, it's harder to parent a teenager.
Yeah.
And so there's just more conflict in the house, which brings up more issues that you haven't dealt with. And, and I realized, I'd not allowed her to have any kind of voice.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
So
that's a powerful season.
Yeah, it was. And still, I mean, there's still, you know, we have our tendencies. I can,
of course,
I can still be a strong personality, and she's a strong personality too, but she will Enneagram 6. So she's, see, there is a, you know, level of keeping the peace, or, hey, what's, you know, if I'm enjoying something, typically she's enjoying it. That's just the way that personality works.
Yeah.
And so being mindful of that.
But,
which you understand. I mean, you've got some, I mean, there's, you guys are similar in that way.
Right. Right. Yeah. Our differences are very similar in how they play out with us. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I think I spent too many years not making space for Laura is kind of how I talk about it. You know, I don't think I bullied in the traditional sense of the word. I bullied in using more words than she did in a conversation. I bullied in being dismissive or minimizing, you know, and when I could begin to realize, gosh, wait a minute. Her perspective is equally important and generally more helpful than mine. I need to make space for it more.
Yeah, yeah.
I haven't thought about it that way. But that was a big game-changing moment as well. Or season. I like that word better. Game-changing.
But again, I use season because my short-term memory is not that great.
Right.
So it's harder for me to remember particular events.
Yeah.
People ask me, how's your week or how was your day? And it's honestly, I have to think for a minute. I don't even remember what I did today.
Yeah.
You know? And so it takes me a minute. But again, I think that's just true with all relationships. I mean, I think my wife is happier when she's allowing me to be me, and I'm happier when I'm allowing her to be her.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
Yeah. You know, sometimes there are things that need to be addressed that.
Yeah. When you said that, this phrase just shot through my mind. Maybe the biggest game changer in my life is as I continue to get older and realizing, gosh, there aren't many majors in life, really.
Not many.
You know, like, I think when I was 30 years ago, everything was a major and everything was worth a fight and everything needed to be done my way. And I think what I'm enjoying about this season of life is being able to go, huh, well, boy, that sounds terrible. okay. The lack of the angst about things. I don't feel like I'm apathetic. I just, you know, it's kind of what Moses said in the first psalm that was ever written. You know, my paraphrase is, he says, you know, our years are going to be filled with toil and trouble. And it's not like pessimism. It's just like, there's just crap that happens in life. It's expected. It's kind of normal. And I think to be able to breathe in that space and go, oh, yeah. I went just talking to some friends about another just tragedy in a church, just watching leadership fall apart and horrible choices being made and lies and deceptions. You know, I hear those stories and I'm just, you know, used to be like, oh my gosh, I can't believe so-and-so did there. I can't believe that happened. It would feel so big to me. And now I'm just like, man, yeah, we all got our stinky parts and sounds like his just got exposed and yeah. I wish him well. Yeah. I don't feel like he's got to pay. I'm just like, man, that's tragic.
Yeah.
Hope he'll learn from it. Yeah. Just like I hope I've learned from my foolish moments.
Right.
You know,
it's funny you say that. I was just reading this, Psalm 90 the other day, and it talks about that. Even the best years are filled with pain and trouble.
I know. I love that psalm. That's my favorite psalm.
I know. And why is that encouraging? I think it's encouraging because that's really life.
Yeah.
I mean, there are great moments, and there's a lot of pain and trouble.
Yeah. It's that same psalm. He says, our years are 70, or if I reason
maybe we get 80.
Maybe we get 80, and we end our years
groan
with a sigh or a groan. Yeah. I just think that can really be depressing, or it can just be like, oh yeah. Yeah.
So you got 5 more years. Yeah. Maybe I got 7, maybe 17.
Yeah. Yeah. We're
maybe 15.
We're throwing the dice. Hope to get 80. Oh yeah. Gosh. Yeah.
So, anyway, I think that is, yeah, I think I'm just starting to dip my toe into that a little bit more relaxed about what everybody else is doing.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Just,
that doesn't disrupt my world.
I had a friend, actually, we're having dinner with him tonight, but she asked me when we started this podcast, she had heard one of the snippets on Instagram or an episode. She said, you said in there that the things you really truly believe are much smaller. They're much fewer. There are fewer things you believe now than you did when you were 30.
Yeah.
And she said, what's something you believe, you know, what are some of those things that have fallen off the board? And I couldn't necessarily think of anything specifically, but I think what you just said is probably it. This there are a ton of things today that don't matter to me.
Yeah.
That mattered a lot when I was 30.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think that's part of what this second half of life is about, is being able to take a big breath and have a you know, I hope my eyes see life in a broader sense.
Right.
And, you know, there are still a handful of things that feel essential and really important to me, but it's a handful. It's not a shopping cart full.
Right.
And at 30, it was 2 or 3 Kroger shopping cart fulls. Right.
Right.
And I think to be able to go, you know, there's a handful of things. And man, I want to be diligent with those areas, but a lot of it's like, well, you know, it's okay. It's okay.
Yeah.
As we wrap up today, I was thinking about this. When I was driving in today, I thought about this word game changer. It just hit me as we're talking here toward the end, is I think probably the reason it's popped in my mind is over the last several months, I found myself thinking I would love to, probably just for my eyes only, maybe pass on to my kids one day, but I would love to capture a little document of stories of game-changing moments / seasons in my life, because I will find myself sometimes in a season of reflection, looking back and thinking about Tim or thinking about Jim, or there's probably other stories too, if I would slow down enough and think more about them, but that will come back to my mind. I'm thinking, wow, that one little conversation or that little season of working in that environment, gosh, it really changed the trajectory of how I make decisions, of how I process, of what bothers me, what doesn't bother me anymore. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as you and I've said so many times on this podcast, you know, I think I have such a passion to offer whatever I've done well as offer the warning signs to don't do what I did to those folks who are behind us generationally, age-wise. Obviously, the biggest priority being my children, but even other folks too. And so I don't know why I'm telling you this, but I think it makes me go, man, I really want to take some time and almost just like in a journal kind of experience, just capture, because I think there's a whole lot more of these moments of going, gosh, that was a moment that changed the trajectory of my life to positive. And that was one that was not so positive on me, because at the end of the day, neither of them are the final word, but boy, they were important moments in what I've valued, how I've processed, how I make decisions, even till this day.
Sometimes I think I have those thoughts too. I want to write down some things to remember. Then I think, why don't I just tell them now?
That good point. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I'm, because I've thought about that too. Yeah. And someone said to me, hey, you want to just, because their kids are really good listeners.
Yes.
We're around our kids a lot. You're around your kids a lot. So I'm not saying,
yeah,
don't do that. But I'm I think my daughter would particularly say, hey, there's plenty of room for you to tell some of these stories that we don't know about.
Yeah. 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 Well, maybe that'll be a, get ready, kids. There's conversations coming from your dads.
Oh, yeah. Exciting.
Anyway.
Rolling.
All right. What you got this weekend? Anything fun? You getting on a golf course anywhere?
No.
Wow.
Not this weekend. I don't
By choice or by back?
Back.
Oh, darn it.
Thing yesterday, getting it fixed. So, a few weeks out from being able to play again. No, just dinner. Got a couple of dinners with friends this weekend. And
Good.
Nothing exciting. Good Mexican food tonight, as it's Friday. Ooh. So I'm looking forward to that.
Wait, I thought it was pizza on Friday. Now I'm confused.
I know. It could be either. It could go either way.
Yeah. Dude, okay. Sidebar. Yesterday, I ordered, my brother-in-law was in town. We were hanging out. And so for lunch, I ordered the Meat Lovers pizza from Nashville Pizza.
For lunch?
I forgot what I was missing.
It's beautiful.
Dude.
It's beautiful.
So we got to get them to sponsor us. This is two shout outs. Maybe like one free pizza.
Yeah.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, right.
No, but man, it was delicious. I've not been in there in ages. That's got to enter my
it's a good spot.
My place to be.
Yeah.
All right. Good to talk to you today.
See you.
See you.